Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the 5E Filibuster.
Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I am Judge David Johnson, joined by Judge Mac McIntyre.
Hi there.
Hey, Judge Eric Asperschlager.
Hello.
So we join you after a week. I guess we'll call it a sabbatical. Can you call puking all night a sabbatical? Does that work somehow? All right. So
it depends on what your job is.
I suppose that's true. So we are back here, and I don't know. I guess I'm not sure what we missed, but we'll try to make up for that. So Mac, why don't you just kick us off? What have you been up to? Anything of note?
Let's see. Well, lots of action going on with one of my favorite TV shows, Castle.
That's right. That's right. Doing pretty well in the ratings, I see.
Yes, it's coming back next year and doing pretty well. And they just announced on Facebook that one of the main characters is going to die in the season finale.
And how many main characters are there?
Well, let's see. You got our two main characters is Castle.
They're not dying. We know that much.
Probably not. And then over at the police station, you have Detectives Ryan and Esposito, which money is pretty much on one of the two of them because they're the ones who are get in on the action a lot. You have the coroner, Lainey, and she just started a romance with Esposito, so maybe they're going to kill her off because that would be heartbreaking. The chief, I don't know if he's that much of a player. And with Castle at his home life, you have the daughter, Alexis, and the mom, Martha. That'd be pretty cold to kill off one of the two of them.
It would be.
So, we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Are you waiting with bated breath?
I am, yes.
Is that your favorite show currently on the air, would you say?
They're going through a runner right now of some just kind of, not bad episodes, but just not up to their high standard episodes.
Gotcha.
They think it's the season 3 slump, I've seen a lot of shows go through that where they hit that third season and suddenly they start going through the motions a little. I've seen that before, so hopefully they'll bounce back with a really rocking season finale, shake things up a little.
All right, very good. Anything else?
And Dave,
yeah.
And on last Monday's show, we had a cameo by one of the cast members of Make It or
Break It. I did see that. You noted that in your Facebook. Now, did she play her character from Make It or Break It?
Yeah, I was going to look that up. I don't think so, but she was playing a gymnast.
Wow.
So basically the same character.
Wow. That'd be a sweet crossover episode.
I know.
They don't really do those crossover episodes like they used to do all the time in the 80s, where like doctors from St. Elsewhere would show up in Cheers and stuff.
Yeah, that was great. they did that on the Disney Channel a few years back. That was the last one I heard of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is an ABC show, right? The ABC Family. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe. Well, we need to get our intern on that, a researcher. She actually played a gymnast. So, speaking of that show, I don't know what's going on there. Is it back yet? I haven't heard anything. And I guess that's what happens when you fail to renew your subscription to the newsletter. All right. Anything else, Mac?
Yeah, that's about it, pretty much. I've been real busy at work, so I haven't been able to make it to the theater, but hopefully that'll change soon.
All right. Eric.
Probably some TV shows that would never have crossovers with anything, let alone Make It or Break It. I guess it's time for FX News.
Yes, right, FX Dave? News.
There you go.
Why don't you cue up that little
soundbite? Okay, doop-de-doop, FX News.
Good, perfect. Let's see. Yeah, so I think as you well know, anyone who is a Facebook friend of mine knows that I plowed through the first two seasons of Sons of Anarchy, courtesy of Netflix Instant Watch.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm sorry. My internet, I apparently have just enough internet to talk to you. It is loading web pages like glacially slow. I don't know what's going on. So I could.
It's like a MacGyver episode.
In 8 minutes. It is. I know what's going
just
on.
Just enough bandwidth to keep this going. Yeah, we're with you.
So just all right. If I drop, it's because of the internet and not because I have totally had better things to do. Sure. But yeah. So I watched the first two seasons of Sons of Anarchy, Dave, which I know you've seen as well. What a great show. I mean, it's a show I've wanted to see for a long time, but hadn't had a chance. And now, thanks to like I said, Netflix, I was able to watch it. And really, I watched the first season in about a week and the second season in about a day and a half.
Whoa.
I just, it was one of those things where I couldn't stop. I had to keep going.
Nice.
You know, I think it's absolutely up to the level of something like Justified to get that plug in there. Just great characters, great writing, really compelling characters. I mean, it's got some of the best character acting, I think, that, you know, is on TV right now. I know, you know, Justified has got a few really strong characters, but Sons of Anarchy has just kind of across the board some really great characters, especially, you know, Katie Siegel is kind of the matriarch of this motorcycle club. And Ron Perlman is kind of as the president of this motorcycle gang. And even his name, Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
As sort of the protagonist, the second in command, who sort of gets a conscience when he finds his dad, who used to be kind of the second on the motorcycle club and kind of the co-founder, finds his diary and kind of sees that he had a different idea for the club than, you know, gun running and just general kind of
lawlessness.
Criminal behavior, right. Yeah. So he kind of tries to kind of enact change from the inside out. And I didn't know him, that Charlie Hunnam. I think the only thing I know him from is Undeclared.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you ever watch that show?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I remember that.
He was the British exchange that's student, right, in that one, the kind of handsome British guy. And now he's this kind of badass.
Well, he was a Nicholas Nickleby, too, which was, you know, like a prim and proper period piece, you know. So, yeah, that's
– Is he British?
He is British. He might be, yep, he is British.
Wow. Good for him then, for really selling it. Yeah, the show also has, I don't know her name, I think it's Maggie.
Yeah, from Mad Men. She was in Mad Men.
Mad Men. So really, a really great cast, really great, you know, storytelling. And I think I really appreciate that they get the details right, as far as my understanding.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I read a nonfiction book written by an ATF agent who went really deep undercover into one of these motorcycle gangs. And, I mean, it's just as, you know, lawless and crazy as they depict in the show. I mean, it's all drugs and passing women around and, you know, fist fights and protecting your honor and shootouts and all that kind of stuff. It's actually going on. So I respect that they kind of get those, you know, even just the small details, the slang and all that stuff, right? It's an interesting show because I remember watching season one of The Sopranos and getting tired of it because everyone was just so unlikable. But they do a really good job in this show of taking people who are, you know, outlaws and lawless and making them, you know, people you care about. And I think part of that's with the mob, it really is just business. And with, you know, this club and this, even though they're outlaws, you know, there is a sense of loyalty and they really care about each other and they really support each other. Whether it's by offing someone who disrespected, you know, another member of the club or whatever it is. But, you know, there's that element that holds it together. So really good stuff. I'm really looking forward to seeing the third season. Season two ends on a real kind of gut punch cliffhanger.
Yep.
So I really want to see what happens next. But, yeah, that's a great show.
There you go. Nice.
I can cross that one off my FX bingo card.
That's right. You got the big one in the middle, though, still.
I know that it's not a free space.
It is not a free space. You have to earn that one.
Oh, and I guess real quick to round out FX news, caught the season/series finale of Lights
right.
Out.
How'd they wrap it up? Like a season or like a series?
Well, they kind of like both, which is lucky because they wrote and produced all the episodes before any of them aired. So they didn't have a chance to react to the fact that they got canceled. And I think that they really expected to go on and for the story to continue. And there's an interesting article somewhere, I don't remember where now, where the, you know, the creator of the show talks about what probably would have happened in future seasons. But it's lucky that, you know, the first season really builds up to this, you know, comeback fight, and they take that to its, you know, conclusion and wrap that up. I think it doesn't necessarily surprise me that the show was canceled. I don't think it's as strong as the other shows on the network, you know, the other really good shows. The characters always kind of felt a little thin. It started really strong, and Dave, I know you saw the first few episodes.
Right.
But it sort of fell into the trap of, you know, too many kind of boxing story cliches, too many side characters who either didn't add anything to the story or who were really compelling and then got kind of disappeared after a few episodes. So it never really found its rhythm, unfortunately, and maybe it would have in future seasons. But, you know, it's certainly better than what you'd find on a network, but maybe not up to snuff for FX. Mm-hmm. So if it comes out on DVD and you haven't seen it, I definitely recommend it. But, you know, don't expect, you know, the same level as some of the other shows. But I'm glad they were able to wrap it up.
Yeah,
you know, at least for them.
I think typically those seasons are typically filmed all at once, right? I mean, I thought that's how they did it. They prepackaged a lot of those shows. So
maybe they did. In which case, I guess it was lucky for Terriers that it ended kind of on as solid a note as it did. I mean, it ended on a little bit of a cliffhanger, but you know, considering it got canceled partway through the season, and they finished off the season, it ended kind of like Lights Out on a note where you didn't feel like you were really missing out on anything. So,
all right.
And I'm sorry.
No, keep going.
Go on. No, I'm thinking now. I mean, thinking back on the end of like this first season of Sons of Anarchy or Justified, if those had ended where they ended, do you think you would have been satisfied?
Let's see. Well, I mean, I
think the first season of Justified had a pretty rocking.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that would have existed well in a vacuum, you know, in its own. I mean, the Sons of Anarchy season one, which is one of my favorite little montages set to music at the end. You know, that I would have been mad just because I have been just primed to see where they go, and would have been deprived by some of the sweet payoffs that season two brings us. So, but I don't know. I think. I mean, they certainly don't end with a cliffhanger that season two ends with, you know.
No, not at all.
And neither of those end with those kinds of just kick you in the gut cliffhangers. So,
I guess one more thing about Sons of Anarchy is they have some of the best of those music montages. They throw those in all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
They do a really good job with those.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I'll keep mine. I didn't really do a ton here. Haven't gone out to see anything recently. Although we did, a buddy of mine did contribute. We paid into Rent from On Demand, one of their their same day as the theaters films, and it was 13 Assassins. Have you heard of this movie? It was no. Kevin. It was Takeshi. Is it? Miike, Mike, I suck.
Oh, you know, that guy.
Yeah, the Ichi the Killer guy. And I've seen a couple of his stuff. And this is a period piece, you know, a feudal Japan samurai film. But it really is completely badass.
Really?
Absolutely worth the $10 that we paid to watch it. It just, yeah, really great. Really, really great. Exciting. It's not like over the top graphic, which was surprising considering the director and considering that the whole, I mean, I'm not joking, probably an hour, like the last hour of the film is devoted completely to the final battle. So it's a thrilling, it's a great movie. So 13 Assassins, definitely would recommend that. But Mac, I've been delving into some comic books actually. Because while I was chilling at my friend's house, he's a big comic book guy, and he just gave me some, you know, some trade paperback books to read. So I read Batman Hush.
Oh yeah,
that and reading. Let's see. I guess just because probably in a Batman mood, and he gave me Superman for All Seasons, right?
Okay. Yeah, yep. I've
been reading that too. So, and I've got Batman Dark Victory as well. So I've been reading a little comic books there. So. Yeah.
Well, you know, Dark Victories, it's the sequel to Long Halloween.
Oh, it is. Okay, which I haven't.
So
maybe I should read Long Halloween first.
The one you have to read.
Okay, maybe I should read that one first then. So.
Definitely. That's really good stuff.
Isn't that the one that, you know, it sounds like it kind of does a little bit what Christopher Nolan might be doing in Dark Knight Rises? I know there's been some speculation that it's loosely based on Long Halloween, but
right. Christopher Nolan said many times that Long Halloween's like his favorite Batman story.
Yeah, I had heard that it was influencing him even with Batman Begins. So maybe, all right, I'll have to check that one out for sure. But anyway, I guess maybe I'm with Smallville wrapping up. Maybe I'm in a little Superman mood here too. So so there you go. But that's about it. That's all I got to report. Even after a week or so. Nothing terribly interesting going on. So let's move on to what we've been working on for the site, because that candle always burns, no matter if we're puking our guts out. So, Mac, what do you got?
Here's a blast from the past for you. Are you guys ready for this?
Yes.
You remember Captain Planet?
Of course.
Yes, I've got the first season of Captain Planet. on DVD.
Yeah, how's that measure up to your nostalgia? Or if you had nostalgia to begin with.
I did. But, you know, I get the thing in the mail. I look at the back of the box, and it says running time, 10 hours.
Huh.
And I'm thinking to myself, great. I put the thing in the machine, and I'm like, great. 10 hours of me getting preached to about the environment. This is going to be fun, right? But I was actually pleasantly surprised. I thought the show, yes, it is the show with a message, and it's got the big important message, and the message is front and center. But even though it's the show with a message, I have to admit, I had a lot of fun watching it.
And the Planeteers, right?
Yes, the Planeteers, those little, you know, goody-goodies
yeah.
who travel around the world
right.
saving the environment.
What is Captain Planet's power?
Well,
what are his abilities?
That's a good question. Well, first of all, you have the five Planeteers, right? You have, oh, do I know them all? There's Kwame
okay.
With the power of Earth.
Very good. Yeah, that's right. Now it's ringing a bell. Okay.
Uh-huh. Wheeler is the American. He has the power of fire. Linka is from the Soviet Union.
Nice.
Who has the
power of starvation.
Yes. She keeps referring to the American characters as the capitalist pig.
Yes.
From Asia, you have Gi, who has the power of water.
Okay.
And then rounding out the group, of course, you can't forget little Mati from South America, yes. who has the power of heart.
Oh, great. Heart, yes. Yes. That's right.
And, the fifth element.
Yeah,
that's the fifth element.
I believe that's a renewable energy source.
And, you know, when the chips are down, when it's the problem is too much for them to handle, which it is constantly, they call upon their powers at the same time, and out from nowhere comes Captain
The mullet, correct?
The green mullet.
Yeah. Okay.
And, although in some episodes it was like it's a really dark blue mullet, so there's that inconsistency, you know, continuity errors abound. But what are his powers? He can pretty much just do anything. You know, the oil tanker is leaking, so he, like, you know, zaps a laser beam at it and seals up the leak. You know, a giant robot is chopping down the trees in the Amazon, so he just punches it really hard and it explodes. And I don't know what else. There's basically, he can just anything you can think of for him to do, he can do. And yet,
he sounds very reactive. I mean,
it does.
I mean, maybe he could come up with a better alternative.
Yeah, maybe he needs to work on an energy policy instead of just reacting to the giant giant robots. Well, find where the robots are being built in the factory, maybe, you know, so they just show up in the Amazon rainforest.
At least put some solar panels on the robots.
That's right. <Yeah. laughs> Zero emission deforestation is the goal.
Yeah, the Planeteers have these futuristic jets that they fly around the world in. I'm like, are those things eco-friendly? even though, like, he can seemingly do anything, it's like, why doesn't he just solve all the problems at once? Because at the end of every episode, he says, the power is yours. And he says that right to the camera.
Yes.
So that is not only the edutainment message, but that also explains away all the plot holes.
Okay.
I'll say this about Captain Planet, though. He is the happiest superhero I've ever
seen. So he's not dark and tortured like Batman.
No. But you look at guys like, you know, Superman or like He-Man, they're nice guys, you know, and they're positive.
Yeah.
But Captain Planet, he's like deliriously happy. When he's fighting the bad guys, he's just like euphoric.
Maybe he's high. Is that possible?
Maybe. Or maybe, you know. Well, he spends all of his time when he's not flying around saving people. Before the Planeteers summon him, we're told that he resides inside the Crystal Matrix, whatever that is. So maybe he's just glad to be out of there for
maybe
once.
Maybe he's helping himself to some crystal meth in the Crystal Matrix. Oh, man. Captain Planet. I saw that song pops immediately in my head. Captain Planet, he's a hero. Gonna take pollution down to zero. Yeah. I can't believe I actually watched that, man. Amazing.
Yeah, so a real blast from the past with the.
I'd like to see a crossover between Captain Planet and the Transformers, because you know those guys are belting out carbon dioxide like crazy. So, or Voltron. You know, Voltron's carbon footprint is huge.
Do Transformers use gasoline?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. What do they?
Too bad. If only Mike Rubino were here, he could
help us. I don't know what they ran on. That's a good question.
Yeah, the guys from G.I. Joe, they'd be another one.
Yeah, that's true. Or the Spiral Zone guys. A lot of polluting. I think the Smurfs are the only carbon neutral. Jabberjaw, only carbon neutral. All right, well, we look forward to that review. I personally do. Can't wait to see it.
It's actually on the site now. You can go look it up.
Well, that's a little too much work. So I'll just be nice. Okay, Eric, what do you have?
Let's see. Well, two quick things. Last week, although it went up on the site this week, I reviewed Black Swan, the Darren Aronofsky movie. And that is a weird movie. It's a good movie. It's a great movie. But, you know, they shoot it in such a realistic way that when it gets freaky, it gets super freaky. I don't know if either of you guys checked it out, but
I saw it at the theater. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's really, I mean, it's really good. It's one of the, I don't know. It's hard to describe. It's just one of the most effective creepy movies I've seen in a long time. And I don't even know if it's trying to be specifically a scary movie, but it gets that across. So psychological.
I've always heard it described as a horror movie. That's what I've heard people describe it as.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly gets that way as it goes along, but it's almost more Hitchcockian in that it's kind of supporting a psychological edge than being kind of just a straight up like gore slasher type thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, that's up on the site. And then right now I'm working on a review of the documentary. I don't know how it's pronounced. I think it's Marwinkall, whatever it is. It's a made up town, so it doesn't matter. But it's the story of kind of bizarre story, a true story of a guy who was basically just beaten within an inch of his life after leaving a bar one night. By five guys, and he went into a coma. They had to reconstruct his face, and when he awoke from the coma, he basically had basically no memories of anything that happened before. So he looks at snapshots of himself from before, and that's all he knows are those snapshots. Even like photographs of himself getting married are his only recollections of getting married. That kind of stuff. But anyway, he suffers a severe trauma, and because he doesn't have, I guess, the coverage or whatever it was, he gets very, very limited physical, psychological therapy afterwards, and he's kind of kicked back out into the world. And so he creates his own therapy where he buys all these scale model World War II dolls and builds this town in his backyard that he names Marwinkall, this fictional Belgian World War era town. And he basically creates this story, where all of these dolls, one represents him. There are others that represent other people he knows, but there's this kind of separate world that they live in where they're hiding from the SS, and he has this bar, and they're all interacting, and it's kind of his way of dealing with what happened. And after a while he takes photographs of them that basically chronicle this story. And it's a very kind of, personal thing. And then after a while, someone sees his photographs, a local photographer, and so he becomes kind of big in the art scene, kind of unwittingly, and, he doesn't even really seem to want to. But anyway, it's just really kind of a fascinating story. It's a very fractured story because so much of it, is hard to explain because it's, happening, in his mind, and, he had this traumatic experience, and so it's kind of hard to put a real solid narrative around it, which I think the documentary sort of suffers from. It sort of just sits back and watches things happen, and that doesn't put a lot in context, which kind of hurts it. But the story itself is, fascinating enough that it's definitely worth seeing if you have a chance to see the DVD or the Blu-ray. Apparently, it's also going to be on PBS on April 26th, so you can keep an eye out for that if you don't want to track it down otherwise. But Marwinkall,
right.
Or Marwinkall, or whatever it is.
Nice.
Not to be confused with Marwinkall.
That's right. Yeah, another great crossover. okay, very good. Let's see. For me, the big movie that I watched recently was the third Narnia film, Voyage to the Dawn Treader. Forever since I've read that book, and as someone who generally likes the Narnia movies, I enjoyed the first two. I thought the second one was better. I was actually disappointed in the third one. Kind of a clunky endeavor. Certainly my least favorite of the three. I think it's because the book is just hard, doesn't really lend itself to a feature film. So they invented like the big bad. They added you know, added some side plots and some pointless characters who are obviously, it's like, we need a little girl to ride on the ship so we can appeal to the little girl, market. So they invented this pointless little girl. So, so that was kind of a bummer. It's a series I like, but I guess it did well enough that they're going to continue on. So we'll see. But so that one wasn't one of my favorites. And, let's see. And after that, just got to give a shout out. I believe I didn't mention this. Right? Did I? I didn't talk about Babe, right? I think that was a Blu-ray. I was very excited to get my hands on. Babe is always occupies my top grouping of all-time favorite movies. I think it is the perfect family movie. Maybe up there with the Iron Giant, perhaps. But to me, Babe is just fantastic. Made by the guy who did The Road Warrior. Another great family movie. So, but a solid Blu-ray. Too bad there's not a lot of features, just a lot, like some recycled features, but it looks good. And that last scene always gets me, no matter how many times I've seen it. So, very, very good Blu-ray. And again, probably one of the greatest family movies ever made. So, that being said, before I get all misty eyed just thinking about that'll do, Pig Mac, why don't you bring us on to phase two?
Okay, we're going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. From there, we're going to go down to the cover art gallery for April 19th. We're just going to talk about what we see on the list here that jumps out at us as exciting or interesting.
First off, I'm going to say poor Bambi. You got some bad placement there.
let's see, Bambi, where are you? Bambi. Oh, yeah, there you go, yep. That's a point. Yeah.
Bambi Although, is kind of, looking to the left a little.
That's true, yeah. I mean,
looking at a different thumb.
There's Captain Planet. Ooh, and the discs are green, too.
That's right,
man,
yeah.
Look at this.
And, And the packaging, of course, is 100% recycled material.
Excellent. All right. Do you think Captain Planet gets picked on by other superheroes?
I don't know.
You mean like in that state sketch with the Aquaman?
Oh, very good. Yes, that's right.
I don't know if he even gets invited to the other parties.
See, there's the allegedly terrible Gulliver's Travels.
Oh, Jack Black.
There's Ip Man 2, or IP Man 2. I think it's Ip Man 2.
Ip Man, yes.
See the first one. Did you like it?
Yeah, it
tells the story of Bruce Lee's mentor, correct?
Right. I haven't seen the sequel. The first one takes place during World War II.
Okay.
And it's during the Japanese occupation. He, like, Ip Man uses his martial arts awesomeness to stand up.
There you go.
Oppressors.
Well, yeah, so it's on its way to Miles for review, so I'll be checking that out. But Donnie Yen is the man. I think Donnie Yen is one of the great imports. And to the left of that row is a movie that I'm sludging through the review of. I'm overdue. I can't take it anymore. Hyenas. gosh.
It looks very clever.
It's just a bunch of guys that's like, we can't do werewolves movies because werewolves, what do we do? Quick, name another animal that they can turn into. So they went with hyenas. And
Could work. They got the distinctive laugh, so they could bring that out as at a suspenseful moment.
No.
No?
it really had some of the worst acting I've seen in a long time, too. Like, just if you can read a line the wrong way, they all do it. They all read the lines terribly. So, yeah.
We've got The King's Speech on Blu-ray.
Right.
And they're really trying hard to make it look dull on that cover. They're just standing there.
It's really not much you can do, though. I guess you could just put a big, fat Oscar statue.
Yeah. the poster was really cool. It had him, like, walking up to the microphone. It was all dramatic-like.
There you go.
But, I haven't seen the movie yet. Everyone says it's
great. Yeah, I get around to it, too.
It's better than that cover art.
Two Mortal Kombat movies?
Oh, yes. Making their Blu-ray debut, I believe.
Here's a true confession that I'm sad to admit, but I saw Mortal Kombat in the theater four times.
Wow.
Wow.
I know. Yep. That's right. And ironically, I actually like Mortal Kombat Annihilation better. I like it more than the first one, even though the second one is generally terrible. But
yeah, it's like it made no
It doesn't make any sense, but I'm just stunned. I just appreciate the fact that they want like as many fight scenes as superfluous as they can. They jammed it in with as many characters as they could and just cranked up the techno. So it's just right. this loud, I mean, you got like Smoke, the character Smoke shows up for no reason. I don't think he ever shows up again, you know, but boom, he fights Sub-Zero.
There's like a dozen characters that they just show up, have their one scene,
yes.
do a couple of fight moves, and then boom, gone from the movie without explanation.
Absolutely, yeah.
Dave, do you still have your Mortal Kombat soundtrack CD?
Oh, I probably
because you
somewhere.
You played that constantly in college.
That
just came out of your room like 24 hours.
That's right. Day. Yeah, yeah. The good old days of what was that? Nuclear something. What was the name of that band? I can't remember. Oh yeah.
I don't know.
Actually, speaking of Mortal Kombat, there's like a web series out. Have you heard about this? Like the Mortal Kombat web series.
I think I did hear something about that.
It's, and I guess it envisions that they take it. It's not – they look at it as a realistic, gritty approach, like almost a detective noir movie. All right. Anything else?
Let's see.
Well, I guess – okay. April – we got Earth Day, so I guess that's why we're getting Captain Planet and the green collar
oh,
all
course.
That stuff. All right. That makes sense. All right. Well, it really sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. Mac, why don't you go first?
Let's see. How about Command Performance?
Very good. Eric?
Rough Cut Woodworking with Tommy.
Oh, man. Look at those DVDs. Holy cow.
There are so many.
Look at them all.
There's just so many. He's making, and the I like the one that he's basically a case for the flag that you would get if someone died serving in the military. Like folded in that triangular way.
All right, I'm just going to go with upstairs and downstairs. Okay, moving on to our ambush topics, and these are just random topics that we're going to throw at each other, and I will start. Eric, I know that you are surely lamenting this, but I'm going to, in honor of the sadly underperforming Boston Red Sox, underachievers.
Well, as a certain underachiever who I believe was proud of it, and that's, of course, Bart Simpson.
That's true. Well,
from back when the Simpsons had that was during the T-shirt phase when my school was banning people from wearing those T-shirts.
Yes, that's right. Man, those back were when, everywhere. Back, those part, oh, eat my shorts everywhere.
Yeah.
Back
yeah,
when all back when yeah. Yeah, back when something like eat my shorts or underachiever and proud of it was considered subversive and dangerous for kids. We've come a long way in 20 years.
Let's see, underachievers. My first thought was Napoleon Dynamite, but I don't think he really counts. He does a lot.
He does a lot more than is expected of him, I think.
Yeah. Well, there's his Uncle Rico. He's kind of
Go with that. That's good. That's true.
Yeah. Guy just sat around in his trailer all day in the middle of nowhere. Always looking for some way to relive his old football glory.
Is he the one who said he could throw the football over the mountain?
That's right. He made the video of himself just throwing the football over and over.
All right, my underachiever is Skeletor.
Ah.
A worthless villain. He had access to a lot of greed. He's a powerful sorcerer. Had tons of powerful flunkies answered to him. Lived in a giant snake mountain. Sucked as a villain. Got nothing. He never got anything right. And was so stupid that he couldn't piece together that Prince Adam was indeed He-Man. You know, the same haircut, build, facial expression. He couldn't deduce the mystery of the spray tan. So, Skeletor, and he was a miserable dickhead to all of his flunkies. So, I mean, if he came through in the clutch at least once, you could see that. But the guy was just a complete waste. Awesome hideout, great powers. sweet face, you know, named like Skeleton, sweet bone face. You can do anything with it. And a hot sorceress with him.
You know, it just occurred to me how similar Skeletor is to Cobra Commander.
They're very much.
You basically just described Cobra Commander except for the skeleton
face.
That's
true.
Although, you know, he wore a mask, so who knows? Maybe he had a skeleton face under that mask of him. Maybe he was Skeletor.
Yeah, but
didn't they both have like equally screechy voices?
Yeah, screechy voices.
Yeah, Alan Oppenheimer.
But I mean, there was never anything like the Prince Adam He-Man enigma that confronted Cobra Commander, right? I mean, he didn't have to figure out the identity of Roadblock at all, did he?
No, but he used all of his mental energy coming up with crazily convoluted plots that were spent that cost tons and tons of money, and you know made no sense.
That's a good point. He really so the board of directors of Cobra Command probably had a real hard time justifying his expenditures.
You know, if either of those two guys had gone after the rainforest, they could have been Captain Planet villains.
That's right. Yeah. I think Skeletor ran a pretty carbon neutral operation.
Yeah, go see Cobra Commander on the other hand. Man.
Cobra Commander. Yeah, yeah.
You think the Pyramid of Darkness runs off of solar panels and?
you think there's any ethanol or wind power pushing those turbines around?
No, sir.
I know Snake Mountain runs off of like lava because lava pours off of the snake's mouth.
Oh, there you go.
It's like hydropower, sort of.
Geothermal.
I mean, the guy couldn't build a secret hideout that didn't emerge from the earth. I mean, those, you know, opening the side of a mountain expends a lot of energy. All I'm saying.
Well, you know, Beastman is always going to be sensitive towards any environmental impact. So, but this is a great little. By the way, this has turned into a great little Earth Day special, hasn't it? So, can never say that we're not, sympathetic. All right, Eric, what do you have?
All right, this is other earthly. No, that doesn't work. All right, this is about my topic is aliens who don't come in peace.
All right.
You know, who come to Earth, you know, it's like Earth Invasion Day. That's a thing.
Gotcha. Right? Earth Invasion Day. Well, Mac, I'm sure one jumped to your mind immediately.
Oh, quite a few.
Right. Let's see. I'm trying to think of maybe a more esoteric version here.
It's going for a kind of a softball.
That's a good one. Huh? I mean, there's lots of juice from that. I appreciate that. I mean, it's our first. We're back after a week, you know.
Yeah, you know, I don't want you guys pulling any muscles.
All right, I'll just go ahead and go with someone I haven't mentioned in at least a few weeks, which is Vilgax from Ben 10. The evil alien tyrant comes down to Earth. In the third season of Alien Force, though, he kind of lost a lot of his intensity. They kind of dumbed him down a little. Instead of being the power-hungry tyrant, he just wanted to smash stuff, and so he kind of lost his edge. But, he comes down to Earth, says he's going to take over. He challenges Ben to a fight, and Ben basically just, kicks his ass and end of episode. So it's like, what's the secret to defeating the evil alien Vilgax? Punch him a lot.
That's it, the end?
that was pretty much it. And he's got this huge sword that he wears on his back. He hardly ever uses it. There's only like a handful of times he uses that sword. The rest of the time it's just there. But still, I like the show.
See, I'm going to go with from the hit movie Zolar, the extreme sports movie, the evil Hedion, as played by C. Thomas Howell. He's looking for Zolar, who is an alien who landed on Earth years ago and is adopted by a man named Skip. And Skip taught this alien how to skateboard. I'm reading my review here to refresh my memory. So Zolar hangs out with his cool skateboarding friends, and he's actually a blue alien, but they still love hanging out with him, and no one seems to be off-put by the fact that he's in the extreme sports circuit. But this Hedion guy sends his alien cronies down to Earth to capture Zolar. So, you know, you can just imagine what happens after that. And really, if you can, let me know, because I forgot. All right.
All right, so obviously a lot to choose from. I'm going to go with the Killer Clowns from Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Good one.
Which is a weird, weird movie. I think one of the things I love about that movie the most, and I think I mentioned it on the show before, is that right near the end, all the craziness going on, someone actually brings up this little nugget of mythos wherein the reason we have clowns, like actual clowns on Earth, is because these aliens visited Earth a long time ago, and basically our memory of their visit is what what made us have the idea of clowns. Which is great. I mean, that's I want an entire movie about that. I mean, forget an alien prequel. I want a prequel where ancient alien astronaut clowns visit Earth, interact with the cavemen. That'd be great. But I'm looking on Wikipedia right now about this movie. The soundtrack. Guess how many tracks are on the soundtrack? Oh, well, this is for the we'll do it not including the bonus tracks that came on the limited edition released in 2006.
15.
Nope.
I'm gonna guess 21.
Nope.
28.
Just shy. 26.
26 tracks.
26.
Is it just like pieces of dialogue just strung together?
Actually, no, I'm sorry. I'm wrong. The 26 tracks of score plus several, songs that people sung. So there's a track listing here of 31 songs. four of which are bonus tracks. So 27 tracks. And the great thing about the soundtrack is that every time there is a cuss sound, like a C, they replaced it with a K. So,
gotcha.
So the track called Debbie Got Caught, and the caught is spelled with a K.
Nice. Fans approve.
Yeah. One called Growing Corn, where the corn is a K, which may be where the band got its name. I don't really know.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
What, like each track like 35 seconds long?
Let's see. The first track is called Killer Clowns, written and performed by the Dickies. That's 4 minutes and 37 seconds. I don't read it all. There are some that are like yeah, there's a 44-second song. Most of them seem to hover around the 1 to 2 minute mark. It's substantial, though. This is a long.
I had no idea. It was such a revered disc. Bring that one to Clark for his Sights and Sounds.
Yeah. It would appear that the soundtrack is about as long as the movie itself.
All right, Mac, take us home.
All right. Mine's a little bit similar to Eric's there. I went with a more of a classic view of aliens with Flying Saucers.
Mm-hmm. Too bad it wasn't Flying Saucers shaped like circus tents, because I got one for that. Look at the ship from Flight of the Navigator.
Good. Ah,
that works.
This is a great ship.
Yeah.
I love the way it transforms.
That's right.
Yeah, very cool. It changes shape when it goes fast. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got that cool chair that rises up out of the floor.
That's right.
Yeah.
I always wanted one of those in my house.
Although I did review that for the site a couple of years ago, and I didn't remember that the alien co-pilot there was such an annoying idiot.
Yeah,
I was going to say
the one fatal flaw of the ship design is that it allows that robot voice thing to sound like Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
There should probably be a failsafe.
And the Kathleen Turner failsafe. That's what happened.
Let's say the bad news is the failsafe is Chris Tucker.
I'm just going with flying. I think the Flying Saucers and Mars Attacks were very much Flying Saucers.
Oh, definitely.
They just look like Flying Saucers. So, and that's all I really have to say about that movie. So there you go.
For mine, I went with a really sort of quirky, unusual sort of 80s fantasy film, which was Batteries Not Included.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, the old people getting evicted from their tenement, right?
Exactly. They've got their little diner and their apartment upstairs, and they're getting evicted, and because the place is falling apart. And what happens? Little tiny flying saucers show up for no reason at all and start fixing up the place. And if that wasn't all, magical and wondrous enough, the two flying saucers actually give birth to three little baby flying saucers.
Oh yeah, there you go.
I do not remember that.
That sounds good.
Is Jessica Tandy? No, I forgot. Yes, is Jessica Tandy?
And Jim Cronin. Yeah.
Wow, it's like a really nice version of that Twilight Zone episode where the little flying saucer invades Agnes Moorehead's house.
Maybe that's where they got the idea.
Maybe.
And one of the baby flying saucers, it might die, so they'd like take pieces of like a Coke can and you know help you turn it into spare parts and stuff. So it's all touching and heartwarming and makes you want to hug people.
Is that movie any good?
Man, I can't remember it.
I mean, I loved it when I was a kid, which means it probably wasn't.
Wasn't it like a young hip maintenance guy too was part of that movie?
There was that because he kind of had a romance with some girl. There was the other maintenance guy who like watched TV all the time, and the only time he ever spoke was when to quote stuff that was on commercials. I guess in the realm of like 80s fantasy flicks, it's pretty good, but in the greater cinema sense, maybe it's not that great. But it's just what always got me is like no explanation as to where the flying saucers came from or why they showed up at this particular moment. They're just sort of there and they're helping for no reason. But, you know, I don't know. Why? Who needs explanation?
Of course not. All right. Now, before we go, I just wanted to say that Eric and Mac, I don't know if you watch the show as much, but we started recording this right after Community, right? So did you see this episode of Community?
I have not. Oh, okay. Sorry, I wasn't able to catch it before we started.
Okay. Well, there's one joke that I just have to share because it's very funny to me. So Abed is – you're going to see Abed takes a class exploring who's the boss. You know, it's who's the boss class. And he just mentions this guy who's written a book about who's the boss. And Abed is talking to the study group and he's saying how the book is a page turner. He said his favorite part is – he read this part where the author posits he tracks Tony Maselli's genealogy back to Caesar. And to me, that's one of those typical Community lines that they just – like every show is just good for one of those legendary lines that you just laugh about for days, and that is one of them. So Tony Maselli's genealogy tracked to Caesar. Oh, it's great. All right. So I guess that's it. So thank you, Eric and Mac, and Friday Filibuster at DVDverdict.com is our email address, Facebook.com/Friday Filibuster, and nothing else to say except, Mac, what?
The power is yours.